Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Lauren McLean will be telling us a little bit about her experiences with Every Canadian Counts. So, can you tell me a little bit about your experiences with ECC?
I joined ECC about a year ago as a volunteer. Did some research on the internet looking for an organization in Canada similar, or looking to do something similar to the National Disability Insurance Scheme in Australia, and reached out to Bill and then started attending the meetings. Kind of the same thing what you're doing, attending bi-weekly, and I'm kind of hoping to start the Stories Project with a bit more success and gain a bit more attention out there for it.
So, for those who aren't as familiar with the Stories Project, could you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Australia had a lot of success with their Stories Project and getting a lot of attention and communication about what they're trying to do with the scheme down there. So it's just people with, you know, disabilities talking about their experience with the current system that we have, how it's not working, how they, you know, can't do things that they would like to do because it's so limited and restrictive. So it's one thing for, you know, workers or people in the field like myself who, you know, don't have that firsthand experience to talk about it, but it's completely different when somebody is actually experiencing it and living it and can talk about how it's not working for them and how it needs to be better.
So, in your experience, what are some of the most common barriers facing persons with disabilities?
I mean, just like this week alone, I work for a community-based organization in London, Ontario, and like four or five families this week, I was just helping them with system navigation. Didn't know, you know, what was eligible for them, what they were eligible for in terms of funding and supports in community. Not sure who their contacts were at the different ministries. Not sure how to get equipment. Not sure. Like, it's just. I think that the basic information isn't there, and that communication isn't coming from organizations and ministries. And I think that's kind of the biggest barrier. If you don't know who to contact or who to go to, it's very overwhelming when you're already, facing barriers in terms of accessibility in your community, or barriers in school, barriers at your job, barriers with, finances. If you don't know where to go to or how to get your answers, it's very, very frustrating, very challenging.
So, do you think it's possible that some of these services aren't as well advertised and well discussed to keep funds from being released, to keep people from actually knowing about what's available to them and getting these supports?
Yeah, I think so. I think disabilities services and supports in general is something that's not well known or well discussed, whether it's due to stigmas that are still out there, or organizations, know there's only limited funds available, and so they kind of you know, curtail their programs to maximize their funding, which of course makes sense. But I think when you look at the big picture, there's still a lot of gaps coming from community supports and and that getting that information out there. I'm not quite sure what the barrier is, Cam. I know pandemic hasn't made it easier. Isolation and mental health is a huge concern right now over the last couple years. I definitely agree with you.
So if you could see any one thing added in terms of awareness of these supports, what would it be?
I think for awareness, I think it's scale. Like, I think it's more people talking about it, more notable figures, whether that's Canada or globally, talking about the accessibility of not only the whole world for people with disabilities, but also resources available. I think it's, from my experience at least, it's kind of a lot of, different communities talking to each other and kind of small groups of families that have, gotten together via school or some sort of programming, and they're kind of working together to navigate the system, but nobody really seems to be communicating to each other, at least not on the scale that I think it needs to be in order to kind of get a national, movement and national awareness going.
So, in your own advocacy efforts, has there been any success you've experienced that stands out for you?
I'm not sure if it's if it was naturally coming or if it was advocacy, but with my my work, we support people in the community who have a variety of disabilities, and we do a lot of advocacy to the ministries for funding in order to open up new homes and get new staff trained and equipment and people set up in a home that they can call their home. So we've had some success this early this year. Writing letters to different members of provincial parliament, different people at the ministries, and again, just kind of having those families just write down their story about why they're struggling, why they cannot continue as they are, and just sending those off, sending emails off, doing calls. It was effective, but exhausting for those families on top of everything else they're trying to do, have a full-time job, worry about if their personal support worker is going to show up, their transit's going to show up, and then additional to, the exhaustion of telling their story over and over again and sending it email after email. It was effective, but it's definitely not ideal if you're in the trenches doing it every day.
So what message would you send to these families about the need to keep pushing forward and actually have their rights respected and acknowledged?
Yeah, I think one thing that was successful for us was just having a couple of different templates that were pretty much already written for families or people with disabilities, and they could change it as they wanted to and adapt it to suit themselves. That took away some of the, the time that would go into writing a letter, and if they weren't sure kind of what words to use or different phrases to kind of get that punchline across. That was helpful. I think knowing the resources in your community, knowing who your government representatives are, is helpful. Even just making them aware, who you are, you live in the community, and this is, the challenges that you're seeing in your community, and that's their role. If they're in it for the right reasons, they should be responsive to that, and look to help you out as much as they can in the scale and using the connections that they can. Just talking about it, I think there's still a lot of stigma out there when it comes to people with disabilities and how they're perceived by, their communities. And I think the more knowledge that we all have, the better that we all are.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
Of course. In this segment of our show, Nate Boudreau will be giving us an update on disabilities water skiing. So tell me a little bit about the Adapted Water Ski Program.
Sure. So USA Water Ski and Wake Sports has a sports division. We have nine of them total, and one of our sports divisions USA Adaptive Water Ski and Wake Sports is focused on developing the space for adaptive athletes. So they host events around the country. It's been a little bit difficult recently, still coming out of COVID, but typically they would host events around the country. We create a national team that goes to compete to represent the United States at the world level as well. So everything from grassroots, learning to ski for disabled athletes, all the way to competitive water skiing is what we manage here at USA Water Ski and Wake Sports.
So what are some of the common adaptations for a skier with a disability?
They vary, and I don't quite know the specific terms for them, so I'm not going to try to even give you the specific terms. But everything from visually impaired to athletes that are amputees, whether it be arms or legs, or paralyzed. You know, we have different abilities in terms of what they can do from a water skiing perspective. Obviously, a vision impaired athlete can still ski on an able-bodied ski, whereas someone who doesn't have the use of their legs, for instance, would have to ski in what's called a sit ski. So they're varying things, I guess, I would say, in terms of the disability, but we offer the opportunity for participation regardless of the disability, again, whether it be visually impaired or the use of arms or legs. So that's the cool thing about it. When you see a visually impaired skier, for instance, it's really neat. You know, obviously it's difficult enough to try to ski when you can actually see where you're going. And for someone that's visually impaired to do that, it's pretty impressive.
So I'm guessing for someone with a vision impairment, there are sort of tonal indicators of where they would be navigating.
Yeah, there are, and then depending on the type of event that you're in, they could have sort of a side skier with them for a little bit. Like, for instance, jumping, you know, the side skier will kind of ski with them and kind of align them, and then for the jump. But yeah, there are tonal things as well as side skiers that that help them along.
So how do you go about reaching out to the disability population to let them know there is an adapted program and they can get involved?
Yeah, a lot of times we work with the various rehabilitation hospitals around the country. We recently just partnered this past year with the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, and we're working with veteran athletes with disabilities to put on a series of clinics this summer coming up here in 2022. The first one actually is next month in May, coming up in the Tampa Bay area. But we're basically hosting learn to ski, water ski clinics for veterans with disabilities in 10 different locations around the country. And again, we're partnering with the VA and some of the rehab hospitals that they have for that particular program. But in addition to that, most of our clubs, a good handful of clubs, do offer adaptive water ski clinics in their communities. And again, they'll work with the various rehabilitation hospitals in their communities to get folks out there. They don't necessarily need to be veterans for those events. But the clubs kind of work within their communities to recruit folks with disabilities to kind of bring them out and introduce them to the sport of water skiing.
So I'm guessing for the veterans in particular, being on the water would have something of a mental health impact. Someone's dealing with PTSD, for example, it's been proven that being on the water has something of a soothing effect.
Yeah, that's true for able-bodied folks as well. There is some science out there, it's called Blue Mind, which basically just does exactly what you said. It does, being on the water, in the water, around the water, basically creates this calming effect on the person, and it really does just bring happiness, basically. That is kind of the, if I had to paraphrase sort of what the science says, it basically, being on, in, or around water basically makes you happy. So it can definitely have some positive effects, you know, for folks that are dealing with PTSD or any other sort of mental health issues. So, yeah, we encourage everybody to get out on the water, you know, disabled, able body, you know, whatever you are, you know, go experience the thrill and the feeling of water skiing or wakeboarding or basically anything being on the water does have that effect on folks.
So, with the adapted program, have you seen any success moment that stands out for you?
Well, for us, they're all successes. I mean, anytime you can introduce a new person to the water and have them experience water skiing, wakeboarding, or whatever it may be, kneeboarding, those are all successes in our book. You know, for us right now, putting on these particular learn-to-ski clinics for the veterans is going to be a big success. It's a huge undertaking. We got a ton of money from the Department of Veteran Affairs to do this. So we are very excited about it. I know our adaptive sports division, the board that sort of governs that division, is super excited about having the opportunity to introduce their sport to more folks. So, but again, to answer your question, for us, it's any time a new person gets on the water, we would deem that to be a success or a big moment, I guess.
So, do you have any words of advice or wisdom for someone with an acquired disability who might be questioning, can I get into this sport?
Well, I mean, I'm sure they can definitely speak to it more so than I can because, you know, someone with a disability is constantly overcoming obstacles and dealing with adversity, something that able-bodied folks, you know, don't necessarily experience in their everyday life. So, you know, they're definitely up for the challenge and any challenge that they face. And in this particular sport, you know, it can be done. I mean, it has been done, and people are doing it and experiencing it right now. So I guess my advice would be, you know, look at it as a challenge, just like you've done everything else in your life. And if you want to be experiencing what it's like to be behind the boat, come out and do it. Like I said, there's opportunities for all different levels. Obviously, if you're just starting out, you know, you're going to be different than sort of the competitive folks that are skiing in our world championships at the disabled level. But there's opportunities for everybody. And again, depending on the disability, there's even opportunities for that, you know, depending on what it is. So, you know, my advice would be just to look at it as a challenge and, you know, come out and see what you can do.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure. I appreciate it, Cam. We appreciate everything you guys do for folks with disabilities, and hopefully we can get some of those folks out on the water this summer.
I'd love that. Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Hey Jammers, on Thursday, May 5th, CJAM will be hosting an anti-black racism workshop. Led by Irene Moore Davis, we will discuss the structures of systemic racism, microaggressions, and the importance of active allyship. To register, visit cjam.ca. That's cjam.ca. And we hope to see you there.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Lauren McLean gave us an update on the work of Every Canadian Counts, and Nate Boudreau told us a little bit about adaptive water sports. In this segment of our show, Ann Gyromansky will be telling us a little bit about Christian Horizons. So, can you tell me a little bit about Christian Horizons?
Sure. Christian Horizons has been in operation for well over 50 years. We started in 1965 as a tapping ministry and have since come to provide a large number of supports in Ontario and in Saskatchewan. We also work in a number of countries around the world advocating for people with disabilities and Cushion Horizons works to support people who experience disabilities to live their lives how they want to live it. It may be in a group home or in their own apartment or for a few hours, a couple times a week. It all depends on what a person wants. We're looking for people to direct their lives and what they want to do.
So how do you go about reaching out to the disability population to let them know that, that your services are available?
Well, we do that in a number of ways that we make contact with people. We attend community groups with varied participants from different sectors, so we make sure they understand what we do. We share information. We're also part of Developmental Services Ontario, so anyone who's requiring services goes through that, and we're part of their body to refer people to. And we have community advisory groups that we use. And we offer various services. We offer community participation, so that's just day options. We offer host family services, so that's where people open up their home to bring people in to live with them. We offer community residences, like group homes. We support independent living, so where people want to live by themselves. And in some areas, we even have respite services that we can offer to people. So we put those out there, and we do advertising, we do information sessions, we touch base with families so that we're part of our community.
So when you mention advocacy, what are some of the things that might be seen as a barrier you're advocating against for someone with a disability to ensure full inclusion in the community?
The things that could be a barrier to that is really, it's a lot of times the attitudes that we run into that we want to bring up and talk about people with disabilities, and it's not received well. They don't want people living around them, or neighborhoods are not supportive. We also run into all kinds of issues with conflicts that can arise from how people want to live their lives, the services that are open to them, so we need a broader range of services even to meet their needs. And so the advocacy part is, we do strong advocacy. We advocate at all levels of government. We advocate in communities. We advocate for a person one-on-one. So it can be varied dramatically in barriers we might run into.
So how do you go about educating people about disabilities and getting around some of the myths or misperceptions?
You know, we really work to help people with developmental disabilities speak up for themselves. They need to be known. People need to be known, noticed, and missed to belong to the community. So the first thing we have to get is people noticed and known where they live. So it's about helping them to advocate for themselves and what they do. And then for us to advocate broadly, just with information sessions, talking to our partners, the churches, understanding congregations that we speak to, and it's just providing information that can dispel some of those myths and misconceptions about people.
So when you do speak to a church congregation on this subject, do you find there's a lot of receptivity to the idea that these are functional people who should be included as opposed to someone in need of healing or someone who's broken, for example?
You can run into congregations and have that idea that people are, you know, in quotes, broken. For the most part, we find that congregations are very receptive and churches are very receptive to what we do and looking out to reach out to people and what they can do to help and understanding them. You know, through this whole crisis, the churches have been really supportive in helping stay connected with people and giving them the support and the spiritual support that they need to be successful and to help them through this crisis. So, yeah, the church community is very receptive to what we do, definitely.
So, in your time with Christian Horizons, is there any success moment that stands out for you?
I've been with Christian Horizons 30 years, or kind of coming up to 30 years. And I think the strongest success moment is actually right now. I would have to say the success and the incredible dedication of people through this whole crisis has been unprecedented. people we serve pay the price with the restrictions which far exceed what we may have experienced ourselves. So their restrictions were even stronger than ours. Without the commitment of our direct support professionals and our leaders, the losses would have been far greater. We would have seen awful things, I think. Society needs to acknowledge first the debt that is owed to workers who cared for some of our most vulnerable people. So, again, I can't say enough of how our workers set themselves aside and put the people we serve first and work to keep them safe. It was an incredible thing to see, oftentimes very much to the detriment, to the staff's detriment.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the need for equal inclusion of people with disabilities, just to be a part of the grand scheme of things, what would you say?
Community partnerships, where we can work in collaboration to provide services. We need to work with the community. The housing issues are significant. If we're able to provide subsidized housing or open their homes to become host families, that would be incredible. Donations of time and money, employment opportunities for people with disabilities that can make such an impact on their lives, looking at volunteer opportunities to work with us. The long and short of it is there's still too much to do, and we have to work together. Voices need to rise together, whether it is to promote belonging, make room for friends, address wages for staff, work on affordable housing, or a committee to work on partnering. It's still ongoing work, and it doesn't belong to any one group. It really belongs to all of us, and I think we need to understand that as a community. The work that needs to be done is everybody's work. It's not just ours. Communities are better when everybody belongs.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. My friends, I've got to tell you, I love Nate's stories of adaptive water sports. For beyond the physical benefits for someone with a disability, certain peace that comes from being on the water. For those of you who've heard this show over a long period of time, you might recall an interview from more or less a year ago where a scuba diving group was talking about the benefits of being underwater at such deep pressures. The brain released a chemical that had a soothing impact on the person. This was useful in helping those who had mental health concerns such as PTSD. But really, you get some amazing benefits being out in nature. There's no reason someone with a disability shouldn't be able to enjoy those. If you can have a blind mountain climber, why can't you have someone with something like paralysis being out enjoying something like surfing? Fact is, a lot of the limitations, or so-called limitations rather, we see in society are those we simply accept rather than taking the time to question them. That's what disability life is. It's asking questions of the possible. It's about seeing what the next adaptation is. Sure, we might not figure it out in a single step. Show me one great inventor in human history who has. It's all trial and error. It is about finding new and creative ways to build a better tomorrow. For once society takes note of what can be done, impossible becomes a word we use less and less, till one day, hopefully, it loses its meaning within the disability community. We stop finding those reasons to say, no, we can't do it, or no, we shouldn't try this. We start looking and saying, okay, this is how we can modify it with what we have on hand. Or, this is something we can experiment with to give this person with a disability a fair shot, an equal shot. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.